Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their communities. How are you this week? It's good to talk to you again. We've got a really good show coming up. I have a chat with Josh Houston from Stark Raving Bread from right here in South Vancouver Island. I was going to say Victoria. Josh doesn't live in Victoria, but the market where he sells his bread and his pastries is the Moss Street Market right by my house in Victoria. So known Josh for a little while through the market. He's one of the folks that actually recognized me by the sound of my voice when I was visiting his booth one day a year or so ago. And said, "Hey, I know you." And so I thought that was pretty cool. And yeah, and so we've gotten to know each other a little bit. He's been super busy, but was finally able to come and have a chat and talk about the baking and farmers market scene in this area of the world. So that's exciting. And it's coming up in a couple of minutes. Before then, how are you? How's things at the bakery? How's the markets going? Hope you're having a great October so far. 4 days in? I've seen some pictures from the big IBIE show down in Vegas, which they seem to run twice a year now. Either that or I'm just confused and I don't know the timing. I seem to get batch emails from that show twice a year, so I guess it runs twice a year. The pictures I saw from the show look pretty good. So if you were there and learned some things and saw some things, drop me a line. Would love to hear from you. Mark with a K at riseuppod.com. Let me attend the show vicariously through you by sharing with me what you saw and what you learned. That'd be fun. And what else is going on? You know, I haven't put in a plug for Bakers for Bakers for a while. So maybe we'll give you a bit of an update on that. If you don't know, bakersforbakers.org, that's bakers, the number four, bakers.org, is a free online community that I started a couple of years ago now for bakery owners and professional bakers to come together and share what they know and ask questions of each other and give each other feedback and kind of help each other out. Because especially the smaller independent bakeries, like the kinds that I seem to be attracted to and visit all the time, it's tough to get out to meet other bakers. And so this is an online forum that we can hang out and be together and ask each other questions and help each other on our baking journeys. And even right now, there's some pretty cool topics going on there. There's a good discussion about three-phase power at the bakery and how to get it and do you need it and how to get it on the cheap if you do need it, that kind of a thing. And even though that's a topic that comes up every couple of years on the various baking forums, it's nice to have a bit of an update. And here's a bit of the state of the world in 2022 insofar as three-phase power is concerned. Jason Bowman, who's been on the show and is a friend of the show, has opened up a brand new bakery in New York and didn't need three-phase power, even though he's got a lot of big gear in there. He was able to find single-phase gear and talked about that. There's some other stuff going on in there. Somebody has a Nero oven for sale, which are scarce as hen's teeth these days. And more topics, people asking about, you know, starting up a cottage bakery and does it make sense to rent a space and that kind of a thing. And not only are the questions being asked, but feedback's being given and questions are being answered and experiences shared. And that's the main thing about Bakers for Bakers. So if you haven't signed up, head over to bakersforbakers.org. That's with the number four, and sign up. It's free to do that. And if you haven't been there for a while, hey, head over, post, do a post about what you're up to now. What's new in your world? Would love to hear from you over there. Okay, Josh Houston. Like I say, he lives outside of Souk. He brings bread to Souk. He brings bread and pastries and all kinds of good stuff to the Moss Street Market in Victoria. And quite honestly, the guy is knocking it out of the park. He really is. Good bread, great pastries, happy customers, a happy fellow on market day. It's a good place to go hang out to see a real pro in action. And now I get to learn more about Josh and what he's done and what he's planning on doing. So here we go. Josh Houston, Stark Raving Bread in Victoria, BC.
I haven't been out to Saskatchewan since the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah. Since the 80s. So my grandmother on my dad's side is from Leader.
Oh, okay.
At one point, my Auntie Kay was the oldest woman in Saskatchewan.
Oh, wow.
At one point. Yeah. she's passed now. Yeah. They've all passed now, I think. Just their kids are actually, they all live out here now, but. Yeah, I remember going out there and all you're seeing is just wheat and wheat and wheat. Yeah. It's like a sea of wheat. And then crows with white eyes. That's all I remember about that. Crows with white eyes and fields of wheat. To the point where it made you car sick because it's just like it's like being on an ocean.
Yeah. So. Well, we've had folks, like when I was working at SaskTel, I had a buddy of mine come out from the Maritimes for like a week of meetings or whatever. And I took him out after work one day. I said, well, come on, let's go out on the highway. We'll show you what's around here. Right. And he was getting sort of weird vertigo. It's like, okay, I got to get back.
Yeah. Right. Building. Yeah.
Cause especially that area around Regina, it's cause it's that ancient lake bed. It is so flat. I never noticed it, but yeah, it can freak people out being able to see that far with nothing.
Yeah. It's for me, anywhere that I'm not near the ocean, cause I was born and raised here.
Okay.
It's just weird not being by the ocean.
Yeah.
For me. I don't know. It's something.
Yeah, so. There's got to be something in my blood about that, because when I come out here and whenever I've been out to the ocean on whatever coast, it always feels like so amazing and just like, oh, okay, I feel really grounded, but grew up in the middle of wheat fields. It's the strangest thing. Yeah, wheat and canola now. Everybody's growing.
Yeah.
Everyone's growing canola. That's so huge. So how's the bakery been this summer?
Bakery's good. It's busy.
Yeah.
It's really busy to the point where I was doing a meetup pickup in Sioux, because that's where I started the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
To the point where it's just like I was stopping on the start of bake day to go out and do all the drop off meetup pickup orders and then come back and finish baking until 10 o'clock and then go and crash for a little bit and then bake through the night for all the other stuff that I need for the market.
Oh,
and it was too much. And I felt really bad kind of starting to shut it down a little bit. Like I'll pop it back up in the wintertime. I still want to be able to give the offer that for Christmas and stuff like that too. But it's too much. Like I can't spread myself that thin anymore. So.
Yeah. Well, even just what I've seen you doing on Moss Street is incredible. Cause it's like, it's the longest line.
Yeah.
Always, you know, it's just sort of like, Folks in that neighborhood just go crazy for their loaf of bread, you know?
And they do. They really do. And it was funny because the first market I did was in Sooke. And I thought, oh my goodness, like I did maybe $1,000. And I thought that was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like that was just so great.
Yeah.
And I was working pretty hard on it. Like the loaves were awful. Like they were just compared to what I do now, they were just like bricks, but they stuck with me and they really, it was amazing. So, and I still have customers that were buying. So this was like 5 years ago. I still have customers that are buying bread from me now that are out in Sioux. So it was really hard to kind of slow down on that a little bit because they're so loyal and they literally looked after me.
And when you start, it's like, well, I'm baking for these people, right?
Yeah. You get such a connection with them too, because you learn who they are and what they're doing. And like, I would, when COVID started, because gas was so cheap, I just said, okay, forget it. I'm going to literally deliver their bread to their door. And that's what I did. I took orders and I bagged everything up. I baked everything. And then I would send Saturday and I would just deliver. Cause obviously I wasn't at a market because I hadn't gone to Moss Street yet. And I just started delivering. And it was like 4 hours on Saturday delivering bread. And stuff like that, some as far as Jordan River.
Wow.
Yeah, because it was just Sooke I was doing. I wasn't delivering anywhere else, but they would pay a little bit to have their bread out to Jordan River, but it was crazy. But that's that's what really jumped the whole bakery off. That's what got me really to say, okay, I'm not doing a part-time or I'm not doing my job anymore. I'm going to do bread. Like, I'm going to look at doing bread now.
Yeah. Well, and what was your job?
I had been a chef for 20 something years. And then we had planned on having a child. I had my son. And as I was doing that, I was getting out of the hotel business and I got a job at Esquimalt High School teaching culinary with a really great guy named Brandon Harris, who's a chef there too. And I did 8 years there.
Wow.
Outside of that. So it was really good. It was a really good experience. So definitely taught me how to teach.
Yeah. Yeah. I never thought about high school as a place mm-hmm. with a culinary program like that.
There's only two places that have them here. So
yeah. Well, even back home, there was one school, Cochrane High School, that did all of that kind of stuff. And they had the big commercial kitchen for folks that were kind of thinking, I'm going to go the trade route.
Yeah.
Or the service route. They could get a start even in high mm-hmm. school. Yeah.
Yeah. There in Spectrum is the two schools on the lower mainland that high schools that do the culinary program. But they're very trades oriented. But I think I think they've got one at Belmont now too in Langford.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not totally sure.
Yeah. Yeah. The schools out here, they're all massive. So,
yeah.
You know, more people and big schools, lots of stuff to do. Yeah. Well, and is Souk where you're from then?
No, I was raised in Gordon Head. So I was born at the Victoria General Hospital before they tore it down and rebuilt it.
Oh, okay.
When it was like downtown, right? So yeah, I was like one of the last babies born in that hospital before they tore it down in like 81 or something like that. So or 82, they pulled it down. So
tell me about how you got started with baking from teaching.
Oh, so I got the job at the school, and then the teacher Brandon was like, "Yeah, I don't bake." So you're in the bake shop. I'm just like, oh, I don't bake. I hated it. I really, when I was a chef, I did not like baking. It's kind of, I don't know if it's everyone is, but it's usually something that chefs are chefs. And then there's bakers or pastry chefs that do that thing, right? And that just was not me. I had a thing for scaling stuff out. I hated it. I hated scaling stuff out. But I'm like, that's where you want me. That's what I'll do. And I'll take it on. And it becomes an obsession, a total obsession. And I the first couple of months I figured out how to make a starter, and I'm like, well, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it as pure a form as possible. So I looked up sourdough and I'd heard a little bit about it. And that's where it got started. And I started it in, cause my starter's name is Benito.
Okay.
Because I started it in, it was literally a container that used to have Benito in it, like Benito flakes for Japanese food. Right. So
yeah.
But it started with that, and I got it off of that Wild Yeast blog.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I started, because I wanted to try. Like a friend of mine have started them, but they put like raisins in it, or they put like grape leaves in it, or they put whatever, all these apple or whatever. I wanted to do it with just rye flour and nothing else, just water and rye flour. And the biggest thing was I tried it once. It didn't work. I tried it again. It didn't work. But then I realized, okay, well, let's try and keep the temp constant. If we can keep the temp constant from the entire time, then I'm just going to follow these steps, and it was perfect.
Oh, so cool.
It just worked out so well. So within a couple of weeks, I was cranking out horrible looking and tasting bread, but it was rising. But it was progression from there. So it just became a total obsession, like to the point where I was spending $300 a week in flour. I was like baking all these loaves of bread, and my wife was just like, that's enough. Like, you either got to quit, or you got to sell it and see if people will buy it. So, okay, well, we'll put something on Facebook.
Yeah.
We'll just try it on Facebook. So we were on a couple of Souk sites. We put it onto that. And the first week we got 17 loaves of bread. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like 17 loaves of bread? Are you kidding me? I don't even know if I could bake 17 loaves of bread. Because I was just baking it in Dutch ovens in my kitchen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I could bake 3 loaves at a time. I thought that was wonderful, right? So I mixed and baked and did all that. And I was cold fermenting right off the bat. And I had a few baskets that I used and did that. And then the next week we did it again, and it was 30 loaves of bread. I'm like, okay, well, I got to start it earlier and kind of start to plan a little bit and do that. And then from there, the next week was 50. And then after that, it was more and more and more and more. And then I started adding some other stuff like cookies, and I added some stuff like that. So like pound cake and that kind of thing. But yeah, and then it just blew up. Like it got so big that at one point I had a home stove in my garage.
Okay.
One in my house, and I was running back and forth.
Oh, jeez.
Between the, because our garage is completely separate from our house. It's like maybe 100 feet from the house. So I was running back and forth. So I had three Dutch ovens in one and three Dutch ovens in the other, and running back and forth. But it was a blast. Like you had so much enthusiasm. It was awesome.
It's nuts how you can like just invent stuff to make it work. Like that kind of a process. I was the same way. Although with me, like I remember when I was baking, I didn't use Dutch ovens. That wasn't the thing when I started, but it was on a pizza stone, trying to get steam in the oven, which was like useless, but I tried. But I remember trying to configure three loaves on a single pizza stone if I just got them just so.
Right.
But then for me, it was like, okay, if I'm going to do that four times to get my dozen loaves out, then I'd built a brick oven. Like although for me, the dream was always to get plumbing out in the garage. Cause I was the same way. I would mix in my basement, haul everything, the 100 feet out, and then bake it. And you know, you're back running back and forth to the house. But I never had plumbing or water out in the garage. But you've got rocks to deal with to get the plumbing in, and back there it had to go down so deep to be below the frost line that I never bothered.
It's a load of fun. It's so much fun.
Well, and where are you baking now, Josh?
So everything is out of a commercial kitchen and supply mall.
Okay.
We still have the two cars. So what was I was originally baking out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing everything from that and selling it. And then it started getting like really busy, and it was like almost too much that I could handle with the two little ovens that I had. So I'm like, okay, well, why don't I look at changing the garage around, and maybe I can and get it set up. Cause there's two rooms in our garage. There's the main portion of the garage, which you could put a car in. And then there's a room.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, well, why don't I maybe look at putting something in there. So it was a completely empty room, and it had a door on one side, and it had a door leading to the outside. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see if we can make this happen. So originally it was my grow room for growing vegetables. I had like metro racks in there, and I would grow everything on heat mats and grow lights and stuff, because I'm really into growing stuff. So I'm like, okay, well, we stripped it all out, took everything out of it, cleaned it all up. I took it down to the drywall, redid all the drywall in the room so that it was like it could handle anything with heat. It was fault fire retardant drywall. I had to make the door bigger. I ended up finding a double industrial convection oven in a field. It was like in a wrecker yard.
Oh my gosh!
In Shawnigan Lake.
Okay.
It was under this big rubber mat, and the guy who had the wrecker yard, he's like, yeah, I'll sell it for cheap. It'll give it to you for like next to nothing. I'm like, okay, does it work? He goes, yeah. Well, it worked when I pulled it out of, he pulled it out of a private school when he demoed a private school. So he's like, yeah, it's fine. And I looked at it, and I was pretty familiar with the convection ovens. Those things are tanks.
Yeah.
So they can pretty much handle anything as long as the wiring isn't all messed up inside. So, and it all looked fine. So I'm like, okay, well, I need it delivered. So I can't take it, because I had a little trailblazer, and that was the only vehicle I had to move things around. So, but he delivered it, he brought it in with a crane, and the guy who owns the wrecker yard, he was probably 80 years old, and he's bringing it in with a crane and telling me to operate this crane as he got here, because he didn't have any help. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm like, I've never operated a crane before in my life, but we got it in. I had the door, I had modified the door so it was big enough to actually wheel this thing into that room. And I installed like a hood system in there so that I could draw it out, and then I could open both doors and it would be nice and cool in there. Well, what I thought was going to be nice and cool in there. And I got some tables, some cheap like put together tables. And I found an old wooden countertop from a renoing guy who had pulled it out of a pretty beautiful home, and it was it was solid maple.
Oh,
and he sold
wow.
it to me for super cheap. So I modified that so it fit on the table. And I just, my buddy who's honestly, I couldn't have started this thing without him. He gifted me a 20 quart mixer that they pulled out of the Empress.
Wow.
Back in the day, he just said, it's yours. You can have it. It was sitting underneath a staircase that he had in his business. He's like, if you want it, it's yours. So I'm like, yeah, I'll take it. Of course. So I had to pull it all apart and change out the oil and rip it all. Yeah, it didn't have any attachments. Like I had to go into like a liquidator and get some attachments and a bowl and stuff for it. But it started right up. There was no problem. I changed out the switches and stuff in it. And it was good to go. And so I was baking bread. I got some really good flour because I'm like 10 minutes away from Nootka Rose Mill.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Where I get all my flour and stuff from. And Jen, the miller, we've got a great relationship now. Like she's so awesome. I can literally just text her and say, can you get me this, 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 and this? She's like, yeah, absolutely.
So
she doesn't do that with everybody. So, which is great. It's usually because I'm like in the weeds and I'm like, oh no, I don't have enough of this. Or I thought I had two more bags of that or whatever. So there's flour stacked everywhere. So, but that's where I got it all and started cranking everything out of there. And I started doing farmer's markets from there. So, but now everything is at a commercial kitchen in Esquimalt. And actually the same guy who gave me the mixer, it's his catering company that they do it out of this
business. Yeah.
So I'm doing everything out of there now.
Cause I think the last time I talked to you at the market there, you were saying you were kind of gearing up for the move or something. It was a while ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm still, the goal is to pull out of there and literally gut the garage from top to bottom.
Okay.
And move everything back to the house.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I want. So the biggest problem, I've been trying to do it for like 6-7 months now, is finding a plumber first.
Okay.
To do it.
Yeah.
To get him in and book him in because they're so busy, they won't even call you back, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So and I can't book anybody else. But we had to put a new septic system on the house.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did that, I actually got them to run lines to the garage as well. So that's all just sitting there ready to go.
Nice.
And we had a special system put in to deal with any flour that goes into the field and there's grease trap. And I've got all the stuff, everything's there. So flooring sitting here, lighting sitting there, all the sinks, grease trap, like everything is sitting there just waiting. I need a plumber.
Well, and you need a couple of guys so you can pass inspection and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Because you can do so much on your own, and then that last little bit,
mm-hmm.
it's important. Yeah. Oh well, that's cool. Yeah, I didn't even know about the heading back home.
Yeah, we have a two acre hobby farm, in Souk. So
nice. My heart's going a little bit here because that sounds just brilliant, especially out here. You're so close to the city. And yet you're not in the city at all. It's just beautiful out there. And
that was definitely the appeal of the place that we ended up buying. So we bought this place about 5 years ago. And this was when we had a big boom of all the people from Vancouver coming over and all the prices were just going crazy. And it was a seller's market, right? So that's when it just started and we had gotten this place, which was amazing. Yeah, we're like 5 seconds from Gillespie. We can literally walk to Gillespie, which is the turn off to East Sioux.
Yep.
And we're 15 minutes from Langford. So we have all the big box stores in Langford if we need to go and do any of those things. But it's so nice that we're so centralized. My wife's an RN. So she's out back into Gordon Head and into Oak Bay, for the hospital and stuff that she works at. So
yeah, she's got the big commute then for sure.
Yeah, she does. But she goes out the early morning. She goes in, so it's not so bad. Or it's sometimes coming home after if she does a day shift. But and then we've got two little kids as well, so we kind of juggle with that. So yeah,
man, you got your hands full. That's
yeah. Definitely.
How old are your kids?
My son's 8 and my daughter's 4.
Oh, so beautiful.
Yeah, today was actually her first day at kindergarten. So
oh, hey, how cool. Well, and so what are you? I guess, what are you sort of hoping for or what's the vision once you get moved in?
I don't know. Like, I think two farmers markets at the max.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's kind of all I want to do. I'm not, I can see myself eventually maybe getting one kid in to give me a hand doing some of the easier prep items and help with dishes and clean up and packing and that kind of thing. And maybe going out to a market. to work one of the smaller markets like Souk or would be really great would be Esquimalt, but to do that atop of Moss Street.
Yeah.
Because they're looking for a baker right now too, which is...
In Esquimalt?
They've contacted me a couple of times saying you should come out and do it. And I would love to, but I'm...
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, we've been out to that one a couple times. That's a big market too.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. The farmers markets here go for a very long time and they're mm-hmm. very well attended. Like this mm-hmm. is, yeah.
Yeah, they're loyal. The customers are really loyal.
Well, and you don't mess around though. Like the variety of things that you're bringing to market, like it's not, my experience with farmers markets, I did 2 years in Regina while we had the retail bakery. And it's like, we brought 5 different loaves of bread and lots of it. And that was kind of it. And if you wanted the sweet stuff, you come to the shop, right? But you've got a big variety out on the...
Yeah. Well, and I put all my eggs in one basket. So like I just do Moss Street and that's it right now. So, it was funny. A friend of mine who owns Alder Lane Farm Bakery, which is up in Black Creek, mm-hmm. she was like, because I touched base with her through Safira Oven.
Yeah, Serafina Martin.
Serafina, yes, sorry. Yeah, Martin. Yeah. So Martin's awesome. I did some courses with him a couple years ago and I did his class. You were actually going to be one of the judges. You and your wife were going to be one of the judges when we were there, but COVID had just hit and that had all got canceled. And
yeah.
Back until later. So, but I touched with Sharon from Alder Lane Farms. You're just like, yeah, if you're going to do anything, get a sheeter and start doing croissants because it'll pay for itself 10 times over. And fair enough, I got a really good deal on a sheeter brand spanking new from Vancouver and nice. They shipped it right to my door. And at that point I had to have the electrical panel actually turned over because there wasn't enough room on it. And then had the plugs put in and started sheeting. And I kind of had to teach myself how to, I literally had a sheeter before I learned how to make really a half decent croissant. So I just, I didn't run it for the first couple of weeks. I had it all up and running just so that I could work out the kinks. And I just made like 8 heads of croissant dough a day and saw what worked and timing and temperature and all that stuff. And then it slowly started working out and now we're getting some pretty good layers now.
Oh, so, good for you.
Yeah. So that was definitely a game changer starting to do Benoiserie. So,
and then you can with your chef skills and your flavor skills, you can start springboarding in dozens of directions, right?
Off just starting base. To do that now. Like we went out, I took my kids out for a walk in the forest and we went and did a bunch of wild mushroom picking.
Oh, nice.
So we got some amazing lobster mushrooms and chanterelles. So we were doing a Danish with one of the guys that's right beside me. He owns Halt Whistle Cheese.
Oh, yeah.
He's up in Duncan. His cheese is amazing. He owns all his own herd and then makes all of his cheeses with that. But I get cheese from him and we were doing the wild mushroom with his cheese. And then the guy 2 doors down, he has his name's Shane and he has this amazing butcher shop called House.
Right. Yeah.
And I would get ham from him and I would do ham and cheese croissants with the 2 guys from beside me. It's like a collaboration pastry. And it was awesome. Like, I love that stuff. I want everything to be as local as I can possibly get it.
We live in this food paradise here that why not? Yeah.
Yeah. And it tells a story, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can literally make my croissant taste way better than the guy next to me because I can tell him a story about it. I can tell you where I got the flour for it. Like where I made it, like how I made it. And I will literally take that time at the market, even though there is a bit of a lineup, I'll take that time with the customer to explain to them, this is what I'm doing with it. This is what I did. And I'm pumped. I love it. I love what I did. I'm excited about the product. So like I was laughing when you had Martin on, he said, no, I'm a hack baker. And I'm like, well, he's not, he's amazing. But I feel like that. I feel like that imposter syndrome, you know, like I'm a hack baker, but you know what? I buy really good ingredients. That makes all the difference to cover up with my shortcomings of my baking skills. So I feel like anyways.
But I really think with, especially at the farmer's market or the type of work that you're doing or that a lot of us are doing, it's, It's so much is about the storytelling, right? Because your bread's excellent. Like there's no denying it. And yet it's that whole experience, the fact that there is a line, but you're willing to take the time with folks and make a connection with them and tell them the story about what it is that you're making or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they're thinking about that the whole walk home, if it even makes it home.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it's the having a bit of a line. I don't know. I always think it's a really good thing.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like, what's going on there? There's, you know, the produce comparison, because you're not the only baker at that market, but you're only the only one doing what you're doing, like, because you're not gluten-free or Japanese or whatever, right? But the produce folks. Why does everybody join the longest line of the produce sellers? It makes no sense, but they do, right? You know, yeah. It's sort of like you want to go to at least the medium sized line, because everybody's standing there going, well, I'm not really sure what's good, but all these people can't be wrong.
Yeah, it's better than advertising, that's for sure. That's for sure. And word of mouth is the best, though. So.
And you have this knack. And now that you've described the mushroom pastries, I'm going to set an alarm to make sure I'm there at the start and not the end.
Yeah, just whenever, I'll put them aside for you.
Yeah, because whenever I walk by, because you have everything out on the paper with the markers sort of labeling what everything is, and that's the samples. Yeah. And by the time I go by and take a peek, all I'm seeing is the spaces where they used to be and the one or two things you have left. Yeah, the little butter thing. But I'm like, that's a whole other story that's going to get people like, oh, next week I got to get there early and stuff. I love it, because even the last people there, like, you're not thinking, oh, was he only trying to sell one thing? You know, it's like, oh,
yeah, no. And I still get that a little bit, like, oh, is this the last one left? I'm like, no, just look behind me. There's all these wicked bins full of stuff. So, but usually by the end of it, I've been pretty good to gauge what to bring and whatnot. Not very often do I have a bunch of stuff left over, which kind of comes from like having to cook in restaurants and stuff and not making too much product and stuff. So,
yeah, so selling out's a good feeling when it's at the end of the market.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
Good for you. If you did end up doing a squimal, that's to do both of them, but that's two pretty good markets.
I would definitely need a hand, I think. But now a squimal is great because they have one on Monday and they have one on Thursday. So, that really gives me a bit more of an option. If I was going to do anything, it would probably be the Monday one so that I can have a bit of recovery. Because I was like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to do this all and I'm only going to have to work 4 days a week and I'll have 3 days off. And then those 4 days a week are 16-hour days.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I'm there at 2 a.m. and I'm working to whatever so that the catering company comes in and they can do their thing without me being in the way either. And so I kind of worked it out now where I'm literally going in almost probably every day. I'm there 7 days a week, but I'm only there for some days 4 hours or 6 hours or whatever, and then I'm gone. And I can get all the stuff done without having to do those huge days, and I can still have a life, right?
Yeah.
So balance is the biggest thing that I've had to learn since I started this whole thing. Well, at least since I started doing this full time, because I'm not at the school anymore. So that was the biggest thing, is trying to find balance. So, and I think I'm getting there. I'm getting there for sure.
Oh, good for you.
It'll be a lot easier when I can do it from the house.
Yeah.
I'll have a lot more balance because we don't have like daycare for the kids or anything. We juggle. So my wife does nights and I do early mornings, and then we'll swap the kids out and I'll do the pickup for the kids at school and that kind of thing. But we've kind of find a niche with that. And we still have one day off a week together, which is usually Sundays. That I'll take off for the most part. Like, I'll only do a little bit of stuff in the morning maybe, and then I'll come home and spend the rest of the day with the whole family and we'll go do a bunch of stuff. So
sure.
But that and taking care of myself, those two things are the biggest.
Oh, it's huge, right? Like, for sure. Especially because like the way that you've set it up, it's like you're both the artist and the salesperson, right? So you need to be, you know, you're the face of it and you're the one making all the product, but it's, I don't know. It's not like a potter where you can, work and build up stock for 6 months and then do the shows around Christmas time. Right.
Yeah, exactly,
you know, it's like you're knocking it out every single weekend at the market and building up every day for it. Yeah.
Yeah. You can usually do about three or four markets, and then I usually take one off as well. So, which is fine because the amount I'm selling at the market is decent enough to sustain us for that week off, which is great. So I do take a little bit of a hit, but honestly, I'd rather do that than be burned out. Like I want to do this as a marathon. This isn't a sprint. So.
Totally. Well, then you have to, right? And well, and that, which I guess begs the question, how are you connected up with your regulars? Like, do you, are you able to send them an email saying, hey, I'm taking next week off?
I thought you were going to ask that. Yeah. So I thought you were going to ask that. It was so funny when we had reconnected to do this. I am like, oh, because I was listening to your podcast and listening to it. And it was like, okay, so I'm in the bakery 7 days a week. I'm in here. Some days I'm in here still for 16-hour days. And it's just bread. My whole life is bread nonstop. So I'm like, okay, I need to take a break from like doing that. And I'll listen to like music or I'll listen to a different type of podcast or something for a while. And I came back to it. And the first one I put on was like 172 or something like that. And you were talking about me, which was so freaking weird.
Oh,
and
really?
Then you were talking about how you should not rely so much on social media as your media base and where you get the word out and stuff and really look at doing a website instead. And it was so funny that you said that because like it felt like you were talking to me the entire time on that podcast because I don't have a website. I only have social media and that's where I push it. But you're totally right. Like I need to all the stuff is in place. I just need to give the rest of the information to, it's actually one of my customers is building the website for me.
Perfect.
And she did it for bread. I gave her bread for a year.
Yep.
So, and she was like, okay, great. So I'll do your website, but I've been dragging my feet for a while on it. And I really need to get through it and get it going that way instead. So
that's so funny. Cause I did that episode and it's, I get it. Like I'm biased because I actually enjoy writing. So it's sort of like, okay, writing a newsletter, it's not trivial, but it's within the realm of what I can do. And I know it scares the bejesus out of a lot of folks, this idea. But as soon as, not long after I posted that episode, all of a sudden Instagram changed again to now they're like trying to be like TikTok. And it's like, so you just doing a static post, hey, I'm going to be away next week. Make sure you come today. Folks will see it the following Monday. Like they're getting you to jump through different hoops for them. And that's annoying. Mm-hmm. But
I usually on Tuesdays I'll post my menu.
Yeah.
And that's all I post. Like I'm not on social media, like as a personal account, I only have the business account and that's it. So I'll go on there and everyone knows that on Tuesday I post my menu with the pricing and you can look after that. Cause I take pre-orders at the market. So I'll go through and I'll pull all that stuff in and then they know and I'll get a bunch of people that'll send in their pre-orders and everyone can see what we're doing this week. I'll give a little spiel of am I doing souk or not? Am I at the market this week or not? And then I literally tell every single customer that comes through, oh, I'm not here next week. I won't be here, you know, that kind of thing as well. And then I'll post it on the social media and stuff too. But it really should be on the website where it's got a place where they can actually go or receive an email saying this is what we're doing this week. I definitely would probably see a lot more of those pre-orders coming through. That's for sure.
Well, and it I'm glad you're taking them though, because it sure helps with your gauging your numbers.
Yeah.
At least you can get a sense. I think there's probably a bit of a hive mind there too. It's like if a lot of orders come in, oh, I bet you a lot of folks are coming to the market, you know, or... Is there, they're all at Rib Fest that I didn't even know or something.
Mm-hmm. And for right now, I'm basically at my max of what I can bake right before the market without like falling into a heap afterwards. But usually for the market now, on average, I'm doing around 350 to 400 loaves of bread and about 1,000 pieces of pastry, maybe sometimes more. But it's great because at the beginning of the week, I've got a huge walk-in freezer. I'll crank out 10 heads of croissant dough in many different variations, cookies, pound cakes, galettes, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I'll do anywhere from 7 to 12 different types of bread mm-hmm. on top of that. So, but I love it. I need to be able to do a lot of those things. Like I for a while I had that imposter syndrome, right? Where you're like, okay, if you're not doing croissants, baguettes, buns, loaves, sandwich loaves, all that stuff, you're not really doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that, thank God, has changed now. Now it's, yeah, never doing baguettes. That's never happening. I love them. I think it's great, but just the time and the amount you can sell them for, it's almost not worth me doing them. So
yeah, they're certainly not oven efficient. That was always my kick.
Especially in a convection oven.
That's
terrible in a convection oven.
It's like, I love shaping them. I could just shape baguettes for
an
hour. I love it. And then how many, I can only fit that many in. And it's like, yeah. And like what you sell them for, it's just, it's so tough, but I always enjoy shaping. But that, well, I just you describing kind of your start of the week to gear up for a market where you can start freezing croissants, bake them off later, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I loved all that prep. I just, it's that is sort of that, well, it's me and my sheeter and my bench and I'm just knocking it out. There is something so joyous about that.
Yeah. I think I've killed 4 iPod or the AirPods or whatever. Like, they get so filled with flour that they just stop working and the thing just toast. But I can just listen to podcasts and music all day long and just, it's like serenity. It's quiet, no kids, no nothing. I don't have to think about anything except for just doing, like, Wednesday is croissant day. That's all I do, is just sheet all day long. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. For me, it was the back of my phone case. Whenever I'd pop my phone out of the case and say,
how did it all
get back in there? Hey, but
right. I had to buy one of those LifeProof cases or whatever that are waterproof just to keep all the flour out. So I'd kill the phone or two after that too. So
yeah, it's wild. But yeah, that's the thing. And then it all comes to a head that night before, and to where it becomes a little bit, always 2 steps beyond what you would be comfortable with, but you do it anyways and go right. And
yeah.
No, well, that's good. Well, it's good to hear that you're building some breaks into that as well. Cause
yeah, I know.
Cause otherwise it's not like, well, it seems to me you're either saying, well, I'm going to work really hard cause I'm building to the next thing, whatever that is. Or it's like, okay, I got to maintain this pace.
Yeah.
I have to find a pace that I can maintain, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And right now this is a good pace. What I'm doing right now for now is a good pace, but I had to change a lot to be able to stay at that pace. Like, I had to change the way I ate. I had to change like how much activity, like I still go to the gym every single day.
Yeah.
Like, I have to go for a run or I have to do something physical on top of this. Just for my mental sanity, like that especially, but, it really helps a lot. I notice it's harder. A week is harder if I haven't taken care of myself.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, that's really important too. So, and I want to be able to bring my kid in this, if this is something they want to do. Right. And I want this to be viable for them. If this is something they want to do, I don't recommend them. I always told my kids, I don't ever want you to become a chef or go in the restaurant business. It's tough, right? Like, originally my dad, I wanted to be a floor layer. That's what I wanted to be.
Okay.
My great grandfather owned the business, then my grandfather, then my dad. And that's what I grew up wanting to do. And my dad's like, no, you're not doing it. He goes, it's way too long a day. It's so hard on your body.
Yeah.
And then I just said, okay, well, if I can't do that, I'll become a chef. That's great. That's much shorter days.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man.
And well, you're not on your knees. You're just on your feet the whole time. And
that's right. Yeah.
With burns and cuts and stuff. Yeah. Well, gee whiz. Yeah. Well, yeah. My dad was an auto mechanic. And so it was like, you don't want to be twisting wrenches your whole life. I remember when he told me that, and I never had the aptitude for it anyways, but
I always knew I was going to do something with my hands. I always knew that was what I wanted to do. So it had to be something, but it had to be something I was passionate about. So no matter what, I'd rather be a janitor than do something that I wasn't passionate about. So
yeah,
saying anything about janitors, like, honestly, it's honest and hard work, but, it had to be something that I was passionate about.
Well, you get that nice, there's a creative aspect to it as well. And then, and now that you're, you've come over to the baking side, you know, you got the science in there and, you know, it's got a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Like the how to set everything up and how to set up schedules and costing and all that stuff, that was already there, which was great. It was just learning those nuances of bread that I find so fascinating, like the different ways you can change this, that, and whatever. And it hasn't always been easy. It's been pretty tough learning, but I've had a few people really help out. Like I contacted the guys from Wellbred.
Oh yeah.
And they've really, really helped me out. Like I started bouncing questions off of them, and they're awesome.
They're good folks. Well, and I was talking with Martin and a couple of folks from Red River College, I think it was, when we were joking that bakers like you, when you finally get tired of this, you could just get hired on as a project manager pretty much anywhere, right?
Right.
Because it's like if you can set up logistics and your scheduling to get all of that stuff to market on time and all being awesome by the end of the week, and still have flour showing up at the bakery for the next week, you know.
Right.
You can manage any software project. That's nothing.
Yeah. One thing with me and technology I don't get along with technology at all. I'm terrible with it. I'm terrible. I was losing my mind just trying to set up the Zoom call.
Oh, dear.
Alone, because there's so much. I can't get all the, I've got like 8,000 pictures on my phone. I can't get them off. I can't figure out how to get them all off. And it's like taking up all the space. So I can just get my Square reader to work for market, and that's about it. So I get my wife to take pictures.
I think that's why you have to get a new phone every couple of years, because this one's right? Full. Yeah. And you just stack
them
up
somewhere, it's, and like, that's it. Yeah,
it's exactly. It's all my photos. That's awesome. Oh man. Oh wow. Well, hey, like, thanks so much for taking the time to do this.
Oh, project. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I'm glad we finally got to do this. So
I always am respectful for your time, because I know you're busy. But I always feel it's better to yak with you here than when there's 20 people behind me in line.
Yeah. I don't mind. I make everyone wait. If you're waiting that long in line, then you deserve as much time as you're going
to
need to take.
It's like, so. good talking to you, Mark. But, you know, like the people behind you still want something too. Good deal.
Well, that's a good thing too about that lineup, right? Because they can sit there and talk to each other, and it's a bit more community based.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's a feature, not a bug, right? Like that is
right.
Like
totally.
Yeah, talk to your neighbors and get to know folks, and we do that all the time. And sometimes I just revel in the folks in front of me seeing their friends, and it's like, oh, I haven't seen you in ages, and. Yeah, that's lovely. I used to love that at our bakery, and all the time now it's like those opportunities to come together, especially after 2 years where we couldn't. It's nice to feel that again, even if it's folks I don't know and I'm just watching it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Right on. Awesome. Well, I'm going to start getting out earlier to see you sooner on the Saturday markets and see what you have. Well, thanks for doing this.
Awesome. Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Wow, that was a lot of fun. I have to say, a week or so after we had our talk, I was at the market, and here again, massive lineups, but I snapped a picture of Josh serving a couple happy customers. I needed it because I'm going to post that picture up on Instagram when the show is released this week. And he saw me as like, oh, hey, Mark, I've got some things for you. And he reached into the bin and he pulled out a bag of two of his wild mushroom and local cheese danishes that were so good. Oh, my God. I treasured those, and I took them home and I unwrapped them slowly. And then Cindy and I completely devoured them. They were so, so good. It was a little bit of a celebrity moment because I said, oh, no, here. Like I should stand in line. He says, no, 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 I saved these for you. And so I got to beat the line, and I felt pretty special, and then felt kind of guilty. And so got the heck out of there before the 20 people in line started saying, who's this guy? And why is he just going right to the front like that? So that felt pretty special. And the danishes were delicious. I really enjoyed the talk with Josh. I like how he just keeps on pushing and pushing himself to do what he wants to do in a way that he wants to do it. And if that means getting a commercial kitchen for a while and renting it while he can build out a bigger space at home, but then knowing he wants to work at home, awesome. And after we turned the
the mics off and we were just gabbing at the end, we started talking a bit about self-care and personal care. And Josh talked about how, you know, in addition to all the work that he's doing baking, and it's hard physical work, over the last year or so, he has really gotten into a fitness regimen and going to the gym or doing a home gym thing or going for runs and that kind of stuff. In addition to the baking, it's what his body needs and what his mind needs after all of the heavy thought work of getting all the baking done and out the door and dealing with customers and that kind of thing. He needs a lot of physical activity to keep him going and to keep him healthy. And he's figuring it out and he's fitting that in with an amazing amount of bakery work and raising his kids and being a good husband and all of that. It was inspiring to hear him talk about that and just the awareness that this is what he needs to be fully healthy and fully into whatever he's doing and carving out the time to do that stuff. It's a lot. I know I carve out a lot of time for myself. I need to write a lot to keep my mind healthy. He needs to lift heavy objects and go for runs, and good for him. So we'll end with a bit of a plug for self-care for you bakers and bakery owners to make sure that you're doing the things you need to stay healthy so that you can keep on baking and you can keep on making people happy and making the good stuff and sharing it with folks for a long time to come. He said on the mics, this is a marathon, not a sprint. That's very, very true. You got to stay healthy for the long term. Nobody needs sick bakers. That is not helpful. So take care of yourself this week. Bake lots, work hard like you always do. Make the good stuff. Take some time for yourself as well. Until next week, happy baking. Bye-bye.